Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Once again, Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, and you are on the air with IHWE Radio. I am your host, Michael McCurdy, the creator and author of Encyclopedia WCCW, and joining me tonight, I have a special guest co-host. He is the research assistant for Encyclopedia WCCW and one all-around encyclopedia of wrestling knowledge, Brian Westcott. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. Great to be on the show.
All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate you calling in to help me co-host on this one tonight. Unfortunately, my regular co-host for the evening, the man I like to refer to as the king of all media, sorry, Howard Stern, but David got a better title, he's unable to be with us tonight. He had a family emergency come up. We hope his son's doing well. They're at the ER right now checking out the little boy, so hopefully he'll be calling in later tonight and give us a little update on what's going on. But tonight we've got two special guests on air with us. Our first hour, we're going to be joined by Bruce Hart of the Hart Wrestling family. He operates Hart Brothers Wrestling, or excuse me, Hart Brothers University. He will be joining us tonight to talk about that training program. And also in our second hour, we will be joined by Bill Anderson. He will be coming on to talk to us about his career, the books he's written so far. There's two out, I believe, and I think he has a third one on the way. And also we're just going to be talking about a little bit of general wrestling today, kind of get some opinions, see what's going on. Hopefully we'll have some callers in. So, Brian, welcome to the show. Thank you for co-hosting once again. And, well, is there anything out there tonight, wrestling-wise, you see anything Monday night, you want to just get off your chest, you got something you want to say, here's your open forum.
Wow. Well, like I say, I know most of us were kind of shocked by what we saw at the Royal Rumble, not to mention, of course, CM Punk leaving. So that's going to be real interesting to see what's going to happen. And, of course, just read an interesting interview on Slam Wrestling Canadian website with about AJ Styles. AJ Styles is now one of the hottest free agents, and he's taken some matches in ROH, and who knows where we'll see him next. But I don't think he'll be going back to TNA anytime soon. As far as CM Punk, who knows? Part of me thinks this could be a well-established work, but at the same time, like I say, CM Punk is 35. He's not getting any younger. If he wants to try MMA, he's going to do it while he's going to strike while the iron's hot, to use the old catchphrase. So we'll see how things go.
We were talking about CM Punk last week. While I haven't thought of MMA, well, my personal opinion on it is I think we're kind of setting this up maybe, for a Triple H versus CM Punk at WrestleMania. That's my opinion. Now, if you read online, they're talking about now, they might be penciling Daniel Bryan in to where he'll face Triple H at WrestleMania. Another great match. As far as AJ Styles goes, well, Ring of Honor, great fit for him. I've heard he might be going to Mexico, do some matches in Japan, possibly. Maybe we might see him in WWE. I don't know. He could fit. He could also be one of those that they bring him in and Vince just chooses not to push him as much because he was a TNA guy. We've seen it before. We're seeing it now. He's brought over Consequences Creed, who was in TNA. Now he's Xavier Woods. I don't think they're pushing him that much, partially because he was a TNA wrestler.
Yeah, definitely. I could certainly see the logic in that, for sure. Be interesting to see how things go between now and WrestleMania.
Definitely. We are on the road to WrestleMania, obviously. They do have the Elimination Chamber match set up. We've got Randy Orton. He's going to be defending that title. Daniel Bryan, John Cena, Sheamus, Antonio Cesaro, and Christian are his opponents. I think there's going to be a little change in that lineup before the pay-per-view, though. I don't see Christian or Antonio Cesaro really being in that match. Somehow, I think you might see Roman Reigns get in there. we maybe might see all three members of the Shield in this. I don't know. I don't see Antonio Cesaro or Christian staying in this, though. One or the other, maybe both are going to have to go. That's my personal opinion. Some people may not agree with me on that. We'll see what happens. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen both Antonio Cesaro and Christian relegated to the middle of the card, but yeah, who knows what they've got up their sleeve. We still don't even know who The Undertaker is going to take on, and I know they're still working on it, knock on wood. Hopefully, we'll actually finally get to see Sting take on The Undertaker.
I don't see Sting taking on The Undertaker this year. It's too soon. Next year, definitely. If they sign him, they get him on board, I see him working out for, you know, maybe bring him in for a couple other matches, you know, set it up. Save him for the big shows, though. We don't need to see Sting on Monday Night Raw every week. We don't need to see him on SmackDown every week. You need to save him. He's in his 50s.
Yeah.
Still knows how to work. Definitely not in his prime. Gotta wait. Save him. Save him for the big events. Save him for SummerSlam. Save him for Survivor Series. Do the occasional spot on Raw, mostly behind the mic. Save him next year's WrestleMania. This year's WrestleMania, we may see Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. Personally, I think this would be a great opportunity to see possibly Roman Reigns break away from the Shield and want to end that streak. All he has to do is say, I want to end the streak. Undertaker comes out, answers the challenge, there's your match. I personally think Roman Reigns can hold his own. I think he could do it. I think it'd be a great match. That's kind of what I want to see. Not interested in seeing Brock Lesnar. The man is a beast. But to see Undertaker take him on, I don't see Undertaker losing at WrestleMania. He's going to retire undefeated at WrestleMania. But it will be awfully hard to be able to put Undertaker over Brock Lesnar, in my opinion. So Roman Reigns, definite potential for a match with The Undertaker. I know everybody's leaning for Brock Lesnar. There's been talk about Daniel Bryan. Undertaker's always a tough choice. You never know what he's going to do until about a month before, as I said last week. All he does, he comes out, you hear the bell, he'll come out, the slash across the throat, there's your match. We're done. All he's got to do. Then you'll have your 2 or 3 weeks of promos, and you go to WrestleMania. Being in a match at WrestleMania with The Undertaker guarantees you one of the top three matches. Doesn't matter who the opponent is, he's facing The Undertaker, puts him at the top level for WrestleMania.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely could see that happen. Be interesting to see how things go. Also, today we've got two big anniversaries. It was 30 years ago today that we, probably the biggest superstar in the history of Lucha Libre in Mexico, El Santo, died. He was in his 60s, buried with his mask on. Think of the biggest icons in the United States, put them all together, and that's El Santo. He was a big superstar in the ring as well as in movies. I mean, it's quite the phenomenon. And then, of course, 26 years ago today, the infamous match where Andre the Giant pinned Hulk Hogan, wins the World Wrestling Federation World Heavyweight Championship on the main event, Indianapolis, Indiana. And, of course, we see the debuts of Dave and Earl Hebner, the evil twins, and that whole storyline, which, of course, set up WrestleMania 4.
And how many years ago was that?
Like I said, the main event, that was like, it was 26 years ago today.
Wow. I remember watching that. That was one of the special Friday night's main events, I believe. That was one of their primetime specials, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah, I remember watching that when it happened. He got titled, and then, yeah, the two referees, 26 years ago. Good God, do I feel old. Wow. WrestleMania 4, and now we're going on to WrestleMania 30.
Yeah.
Also, another thing, you know, I almost forgot about this, and I would feel horrible if I did. Today, February 5th, I would like to wish a happy birthday to Barbara Goodish, the widow of the great Bruiser Brody. Today's her birthday. Happy birthday,
yes.
Barbara. I hope you're enjoying it. Thank you for all the years your husband gave us in that ring. Thank you for, honestly, thank you for sharing him with us. I know that was a tough thing. He was a traveling man. He went all over the world. But he created such a legend for himself, and it puts a spot in the history of this sport. So, Barbara, thank you for that. Happy birthday. I hope you're having a wonderful day.
Definitely. I echo Michael's sentiments. And Brody was a great anti-hero and just a big legend, an icon, and someone people looked up to. The greatest brawler in the history of this business, bar none. Wrestling Observer Newsletter, they've named their Brawler Award after him as a result. That's how famous he got. So yes, thank you, Barbara. Hope your son Jeffrey's doing well. Thank you for all you've done, and thank you for letting him be part of our lives.
All right, we've got just a few more minutes before Bruce Hart will be joining us. And I'm going to take this opportunity. Normally with this show, we're here to talk about wrestling. That's the thing. IWE Radio, the Legends of Texas Wrestling, Legends of Wrestling around the world, that's what we're here to talk about. But I'm going to jump on my soapbox for just a second. We're going to break away from wrestling for just a minute. I think I can segue back in. Brian, I don't know if you're a football fan, but you had to at least seen a little bit of the Super Bowl. Did you see the Coca-Cola ad?
Oh, yeah, I did get to see some of that.
Exactly. I'm going to take a second here. I told David, I asked, I said, can I reference it? He said, sure, go ahead. People, it's a commercial. It was a one-minute ad. In my opinion, it was well done. Yes, it's America the Beautiful, and it is sung in multiple different languages, but they're singing our song. They're singing America the Beautiful. It's not a collage of the Israeli national anthem and the Canadian national anthem and all that. It's America the Beautiful sung in different languages. It's supposed to be showing the cultural diversity of America. You got people on the internet now on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere else. I'm not drinking Coca-Cola anymore. They're anti-American. Blah, blah, blah. Coke is bad. Don't drink Coke. Boycott Coke. It's an American song. Now, I can segue this to wrestling real fast. Years ago, Sergeant Slaughter, Iraqi sympathizer, we hated Sergeant Slaughter. WrestleMania 7, they had to move to a small arena security-wise because of death threats. People hated Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant Slaughter was the enemy. But as soon as he waved the American flag and said, I apologize for everything I did, saluted the flag, we loved him once again. So, like wrestling, you see that commercial right now? Boo, Coke, we hate them. Give it 2 or 3 months, people. Maybe not even 2 or 3 months. 2 or 3 weeks. Couple days. And all of a sudden, you're going to reach into that refrigerator. You're going to be like, oh, it's so hot, I'm thirsty. You're going to crack open that cold Coca-Cola. You're going to drink that thing. You're going to forget about the commercial. So right now, if you're a wrestling fan, pretend that right now, Coca-Cola is Sergeant Slaughter. Bad guy now. Later on, you'll forget about it. He's a good guy. But whatever. Segue into wrestling. Segue into a commercial. It's bottom line. It's a commercial. All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox on that one. I just had to say it. I've been listening to it for days. My opinion, I have open air. Hopefully people aren't going to stop listening now. I hope I don't drop any callers, but I had to say something.
Yeah, I saw the commercial. I did not see any problem with it, and I thought it made a nice gesture to the melting pot that America is. I mean, we're all products of immigration for the most part. wasn't for that, none of us would be here. Yeah, besides, yeah, give it a few weeks. Besides, we've got the Olympics coming up. So we'll have already forgotten about the Super Bowl, and we've already will be moving on to other things.
My point exactly. Thank you for agreeing with seeing my side of this. I've had this argument a couple times with some people. It's just, I don't know. I wanted to come on. I wanted to make a couple jokes, you know, but I decided, no, I was going to go classy. I'm just going to come out and state my opinion. Like I said, I'm the host. We got live radio, golden opportunity. And we're on it's about the 8:15 Central Standard Time. We should be hearing from our guest. Once again, we're being joined in this first hour by Bruce Hart from the Hart Brothers University. He'll be joining us tonight to talk about training with Hart Brothers University. He's going to tell us some stories about training in the dungeon with his father, the late Stu Hart. I had a chance to talk to him a few minutes ago, do a little pre-interview. We're going to get his opinions on Owen sometime going into the Hall of Fame. He's got his opinion on that. We talked about that for a little bit. I think people are going to be, you know, I think they're going to like to hear what he's got to say.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And then also in our second hour, as I said earlier, we will be joined by Bill Anderson. He's the author of two books, Big Bill Anderson Remembers the School of Wrestling and Big Bill Anderson Remembers His Fallen Friends of Wrestling. I believe the third book he's working on is not wrestling related. I believe that one is the so-called Death Tour of California, I think is what it is. All the famous celebrity sites where all the celebrity deaths and, you know, like the Manson and all those other things. But he'll be on to talk about that. What one thing is people may not realize is Bill Anderson, along with Red Bastien, you know, they trained a lot of the guys you see in the ring now, including the man we were just talking about a few minutes ago, Sting. He also had a hand in training the Ultimate Warrior, who's going into the Hall of Fame this year. So maybe we'll get Bill's opinions on that and tell us a couple stories of
Yeah, that should be a good one, too.
Okay. All right, folks. As always, the wonders of live radio. We seem to be having a little bit of a communication error. Brian, I hate to do this to you. If you can kind of take over the reins for a minute, maybe give us a little more historical facts. I'm going to take care of something. I will be right back.
All right. Well, folks, as we mentioned, February 5th, big day today. El Santo passing away. We had Andre the Giant taking on Hulk Hogan, winning the title. And we've also got another anniversary coming up. And I'll ask Bill Anderson about this in the second hour. I'm going to ask him his thoughts on a man that he was involved in training, and we got to see this man develop until we tragically lost him in February of 1998, the one, the only, Louis Spicoli. And Louis Spicoli, I thought, had tremendous amounts of talent and potential. And, yes, he even got to hold a few championships. He did get to WCW, and just right about then, you know, tragedy struck. And we lost him at a very young age. And just all these things we see in the news, Philip Seymour Hoffman, his recent death, just like we say, yes, a lot of negativity. But we also, at least with Encyclopedia WCCW, we want to focus on the positive. We want to focus on all the wonderful things that pro wrestling has brought to us. And, yes, despite some of the heartaches and tragedies we all go through in life, yes, we have a chance to move on and be better. And yes, it is great to be a part of this with IHWE Radio. And, yes, of course, the IHWE Texas Wrestling Hall of Fame. That will be that ceremony will be coming up here shortly. Also, this weekend, for the wrestlers out there, if you can get in touch with Johnny Mantell, he'll give you the details on the Texas Shootout in something Red Bastide set up. And it's a boys-only reunion. Location is top secret, but basically it'll be a nice, go to a nice place for lunch, and just a great reunion for everybody, which, of course, will lead right into the big shindig in June the 2nd through the 4th. Cauliflower Alley Club, 49th Reunion, Gold Coast Hotel and Casino. Make sure you get your banquet tickets, get your hotel reservations. You will not want to miss it. Terry Taylor is being honored. Phil Hayes of the Fabulous Freebirds will be honored. Adam Pearce, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, cheerleader Melissa Anderson. And y'all have to ask Bill Anderson about her as well. So, yeah, he kind of had some ties to her training. Got to know her father real well. So, like I say, folks, we are looking forward to some great stuff. Yes, Michael?
Sorry to break in there. Did have a little bit of technical difficulty. Like I said, the wonders of live radio. We do have the situation under control, and joining us now is Bruce Hart from Hart Brothers University.
How are you, Mike?
How you doing tonight, Bruce?
I'm doing all right. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't know that I got through or not. That's cool. So, yeah, doing well. Thanks for the vine, as they say. What's shaking?
No problem. Thank you for joining us tonight. Sorry about some little technical difficulties there. I understand you had a problem calling in for a second, but we did get the situation under control.
No problem.
Hello,
Brian.
Hi,
Bruce.
Yes, nice to finally get to talk to you, Bruce. I got to meet Smith as well as Ross as well as Bob Johnson with the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad he got a chance to meet them all stand-up people and good friends of mine. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Hi, Bruce. Let's start this interview here.
Okay.
As I was telling earlier, you are now associated. You started Hart Brothers University. If you don't mind, maybe you can give us a little bit of the history behind Hart Brothers University, how it started, and just what the goal
is.
It's
basically
just
an extension or an evolution of, you know, I've been in the business for a long time. I started wrestling and booking and training those guys for my dad back in the 80s. So at that time, I was turning out guys like the Bulldogs and Brett and Owen and Pillman and Benoit and Liger and Hossie and Hashimoto, guys like that. So, we kind of restarted it a few years back for a number of reasons. You know, we sort of had, as you were probably aware, we had some heat or a bit of a falling out with WWE after Owen's death and a lot of the acrimony that was, you know, kind of going down after Brett and the Montreal and all that stuff. But we sort of had mended the fences, and but yeah, I had a lot of people approaching us, and my own kids, who they were kind of just getting of that age, you know, their late teens, and they were, you know, intrigued with the wrestling. So we kind of had started people, some of whom you're probably familiar with, people like Harry, who later became David Hart Smith in WWE, and Natalia and TJ Aka, Tyson Kidd, and some of those guys. So it was just sort of an extension of that, you know. But yeah, as I said before, you know, we've had a, you know, long before I was training guys, my dad was you know, doing his thing in the dungeon, which is where we were training guys as well, you know, and it was sort of almost legendary, you know, all the guys who came through there and, you know, cut their teeth down in that dungeon, you know, from as far back as the guys like Mad Dog Vachon and the Johnny Valentines and the Stompers and, you know, Tolis Brothers and, you know, Ilio DiPaolo and all those types. Even Gorilla Monsoon was down there back in his early days, long before he became Gorilla Monsoon, you know. And so, you know, we had a pretty extensive history, and that's long been one of my opinions. Is it's one of the things the wrestling business is really lost in the last 20, 30 years is the grassroots that it once had. You know, there back in the day when I was starting in wrestling, there was, 30 territories, and you'd be able to go from one place to another, and, you know, there's some awesome learning territories like Minneapolis and Amarillo and, Portland and even down in Ontario, there was a whole bunch of guys coming out of there that were phenomenal. And some of the guys that were in California down in the old Joe Malkiewicz and Eileen Eaton era, you know, that kind of thing. So but that's sort of all been lost in the last 20, 30 years. So, you know, so that's sort of in a nutshell what one of our primary initiatives or objectives is, to kind of restore some old school and resow the seeds at the grassroots. You know, there's no, I can't even fathom any other major sports such as, say, hockey or baseball or basketball or football if they did away with, like, the college football, or they did away with Little League and, you know, baseball leading up to major leagues, or, you know, hockey up here, you know, if you did away with junior and all like that, you know, the whole thing would kind of die on the vine, you know, and wrestling's kind of, in my estimation, gone that way, you know. It's kind of a reflection of the shortage of talent right now that they have to keep invariably going back, like the last half dozen WrestleManias. The main event almost every year is bringing Brett back or bringing The Rock back, or this year bringing Batista or Brock Lesnar or, you know, that Shawn Michaels or The Undertaker for the 400th time or something like that, you know. But doesn't say much about for the new breed, you know, the up-and-coming guys, when they seem to always have to go back to the blasts from the past. So I think it says a lot about the need for, developing new talent. And you can't just develop new talent in these sterile environments like NXT or FCW and all like that. The other side of the coin is you actually have to, you know, give these guys an opportunity to apply what they've learned and qualify anything and everything you're teaching them with some rationale or explanation. You know, all too often I see guys doing stuff in the ring for no perceptible reason, you know, dyeing their hair or wearing, you know, adopting goofy gimmicks and doing high spots and crap, and you ask him after, why did you do this, or how come you're adopting this role or that, and they don't even have any idea, you know, they just sort of, it's all kind of hit and miss, and like a glorified version of flinging shit against the wall and hoping something will stick type thing. So I think they need to, you know, go back to square one and learn the basics and have some perceptible idea of why they're doing what they're doing and apply it. Then there should be some, purpose and whatever to whatever they're doing, you know. So that's all part of the whole learning process. It's kind of the way it used to be back in the day, you know. It's kind of unfortunate that there's, like, when I was breaking into the business, there were so many of these really, you know, ring-wise, savvy, older guys that, you know, would give you advice, and guys like Dory Funk Sr. and Vern Gagne and Don Owens and, you know, Gene LaBelle and all these guys all over the place, you know, he'd get schooled in all the little subtleties and that kind of thing, and nowadays there's virtually none of that, you know, it's way harder, and so I'm hopeful that you know, some of those things kind of come back. You know, that's something the business sorely needs.
All right. Well, I have just been informed that we are being joined now by my regular co-host. David Fuller is now on in the studio with us. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I had a little. My son had a little cough. We wanted to go get him checked out since he's only about 6 weeks old, and the weather is a little colder down here than normal. But I'm on. I'm happy to be here, and I'm so happy Bruce Hart is on. Bruce, I got one real quick question.
Hope your son's doing well, Dave. I got five kids myself, so I can.
Thank you very
empathize.
Much.
Okay. Hope it's, everything went well.
Oh yeah, he's doing great. He's a real trooper. My question for you is, and it's an honor to be speaking with you, anybody who's a real student of the game knows that the Hart family, I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so we had the Von Erich family, but the Hart family is the family in wrestling, along with the Von Erich.
Actually, when I was a little kid, Fritz Von Erich was staying in my dad's backyard in a trailer, and he was breaking in up here himself, old Fritz. So, and I remember the kids were... The older ones were, you know, staying in the trailer. I sort of knew them all, the David and Kevin, and there was Jackie, the oldest one, who unfortunately got killed when he was. But, I knew them all quite well. You know, Fritz cut his teeth up here. I remember a lot of those old Texas guys, Luis Hernandez and Bronco Lubitsch, and some of those guys were all up here, so it was kind of cool. I had a bit of opportunity to hang with the Texas guys, and of course later on Dorian Terry and all those guys from Amarillo. So.
That's awesome. Yeah, there's a lot of good people who've come from here. My question is a lot of people we've heard about this on various DVDs and whatnot. In Canada during the Stampede days, I've heard story after story after story about the treacherous weather and the roads. And I mean, back then, I mean, nowadays we got cell phones, we got GPSs, but back when you guys were doing it, your family, your brothers, the conditions y'all had to travel in. Give our listeners, and maybe some of the people that broke into the business a few years ago, an idea of what it was like going from town to town in Canada during the worst time of the year.
It was sort of an ongoing, it wasn't that good even in the summer, but winter was, we were averaging about 2,000 miles a week, every week, driving through, we were sort of like the U.S. Postal Service, you know, through sleet and rain and hail and all, you know, it was kind of strange. Very rarely do we ever miss a shot, but I remember having to drive through blizzards and through the mountains, and they would have the highway closed and tell us if we broke down, we were on our own, and all this other. And I remember a few of the. I remember some of the guys that had come up here from the States, like Junkyard Dog, when he first came up here, and. None of those guys ever dressed for the weather, you know, they're always like dressed up in their, cording clothes, and they'd be wearing loafers and a silk suit and whatever, and all the normal guys up here wearing down parkas and And, you know, I can't name how many times.
JYD was just this Mid-South weather.
Yeah, and I remember some of those guys in tears, the guys from, like, Puerto Rico and Hawaii and Australia and some of those warm weather places, and you know, I remember we had this big Hawaiian up here named King Curtis, who was from Hawaii, and he used to refer to it as the bitter end up here. But yeah, it was, you know, almost every week there was something going on. You know, if we weren't breaking down, there was invariably all kinds of ribs and practical jokes being perpetrated and all that type of stuff. I think Calgary was sort of, you know, almost notorious for the practical jokes and the ribbing and all that crap, you know. There were some pretty diabolical ribbers up here, the Dynamite Kids, and the, I think even old Johnny Valentine was kind of, got his start doing that up here. And
He trained me. I met Johnny in 98, and he broke me into the business. He trained me, and he told me about some of the ribs he did. And you just, I mean, Johnny, he didn't open up to me, you know, right at first, but I remember one day we were talking, and he started telling me about the ribs, and he would just laugh, and his big, deep voice. And so I could not believe some of the stuff. And then I talked to other people in the business years later, and they confirmed it. They were like, yeah, he's not lying. He did that stuff.
Yeah, I know he sent his son up here, Greg, who at that time was, we had him teamed up with this notorious, who's almost legendary, ribber and degenerate named Don Fargo, or Don Colt, you know. And, there was, I think Buddy Roberts was just getting his feet wet up here too, and he was kind of in on some of that. But there was just one episode after another, you know, and my dad always seemed to have a propensity for some of those other old kind of degenerate rivers like Ted Christie and some of those guys, you know, and Tommy O'Toole and Frankie Murdoch and some of those old, borderline degenerate rivers, you know. They added a lot of flavor to the business, so there was, always something happening, you know. Doesn't seem to be that many guys of that ilk these days, you know. But those are all some of the guys that, you know, kind of made the business what it was, you know. I think old Harley he was in on, you know, pretty good old river as well. And Terry Funk, when they were up here, they're always up to some little bit of mischief or whatever the hell, you know, whether the Mabel parties or the, you know, the some of the other stuff I probably can't discourse on in public about it. Quite often you don't like to discourse on it because some of the victims are still alive. You know, they might, and they probably don't know that some of that stuff was perpetrated on them or some of that, you know, so...
Those are like, you know, they're urban legends up there that'll be talked about for years and years, but they're actually not urban legends. They're true. It's just they'll be talked about for years and years, and people won't know who did it or perpetrated it. So there you go. It's a big mystery.
So, Bruce, if I can jump in here real quick, you're talking about some of the ribs and some of the big rivers that were going through the Canada area. I've had a chance to talk with Ross at the Cauliflower Reunion, and Brett as well. And from what I understand, that Owen was quite a, was one of the big rivers. He had quite the passion for the practical jokes. I was wondering, is there any, like, one person that really stands out to you that maybe you could share with our listeners? Because I know for myself, I'm a big fan, you know, of Owen. I still watch some of his stuff. My son is actually named after him. So I'm sure our listeners would love to hear if there's a classic rib that you might be able to share with us.
There was a few. Owen was always up to something. Good thing about Owen, he always did it so subtly that it never seemed like it was a rib, you know. But I remember back in the 90s, there was some, one of those WrestleManias, I think it was down in L.A. or something like that. And I remember way back when my dad had this guy back in the 50s broke in up here, sort of a mid-card guy named Reggie Parks, and he had later on kind of done the circuits and been around, you know, and pretty mild-mannered guy. But I remember when, apparently when he started up here in the 50s, I think my dad and my dad used to have a few of those other old shooters, like George Gordienko and Luther Lindsay and Gordon Nelson, and those guys that used to kind of put the new guys through their paces when they were getting into the business. And I think back in the day, my dad, I think, stretched Reggie Parks several times down there and kind of, you know, kind of chewed him up and spit him out or whatever. But anyway, my dad, I guess, was down at one of those WrestleManias or whatever in L.A., and I guess Owen called up my dad's hotel room. Owen was really awesome at impersonating voices to a T, you know. And so I guess Owen called up my dad's room as Reggie Parks and started, you know, kind of, Stu, it's, and he was stammering and all like this, it's Reggie Parks, and I'd just like to say that, you know, you can beat me in your best day and all this other, and that you, you know, took advantage of me while I was breaking in and all this other, and he kind of went on this long diatribe about, you know, if I see you in the lobby, Stuart, you know, I want you to go for your best hold or something like that. And so anyway, a while later at the function or whatever, Reggie Parks came up to Stu just to say hi. My dad had been so worked up by Owen that he exploded on Reggie Parks. I think my dad was in his 70s or whatever at this time and said, if you want to go right now, Reggie, go for it or something like that. Reggie Parks had no idea what my dad was talking about, why my dad is firing up and, you know, basically asking him if he wants to shoot right in the middle of the lobby or whatever the hell, you know. So that was sort of like one of the Owen stories, but he used to do that stuff pretty regularly, you know. He's a pretty pretty good sense of humor. Good thing about Owen is, even after he had pulled these ribs, you're never quite sure if, you know, if you had been ribbed or whether it was, you know, for real or whatever, you know. So, but yeah, he was a great guy to have in the territory. Always kind of that, a bit of that kind of humor kept everybody kind of, you know, kind of loosened everyone up and made it a lot more fun.
Now, you know, since we're on the subject of Owen here for just a moment, we were talking about the Hall of Fame just a few minutes earlier before you came on, and obviously so far they've announced Jake Roberts and Ultimate Warrior for this year's class. What is your opinion on them one day inducting Owen into the Hall of Fame?
I've been advocating it. I think he should have been inducted already. He should have been inducted a long time ago. You know, obviously there's, I think, some sensitivity there with his widow, Martha, who's, I don't think she has any regard for WWE or anything, but just from a wrestling and a fan perspective, I think that he's, you know, it's long overdue, and, you know, he obviously paid the ultimate price for the wrestling business, but beyond that, you know, he was a phenomenal worker, you know. Quite honestly, I don't think he, and it's kind of sad, he was just, I think, on the verge of really coming into his own you know, for a long time when WWE brought him in there, they didn't, I thought they misused him. You know, I never thought he was well used as a heel. And some of the other incarnations they had at High Energy with Coco and Blue Blazer and the American Eagle and the Blue Demon and all that crap, you know, was almost like a rib. But when he finally started when they finally just let him do his thing, you know, I think he would have really ascended to every bit as high a level, if not higher, than Brett. I always thought Owen was a better athlete than Brett and a little more dynamic. And so I think he definitely should be in the Hall of Fame, and I'm hoping that happens. And while I'm on that topic, I've long advocated that two other Stampede alumni, Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy, should be in there too. You know, I can't fathom why they're not in there. You know, they were cutting edge and dynamic, and they were one of the best tag teams in WWE history. And as single performers, you know, it's almost a shame that when Dynamite Kid finally got to the WWE, even though he's probably only in his 20s, even then he was already kind of, you know, damaged goods. But if you think back on their singles capability, you know, and you know, all over the world, you know, in England and Japan and the States and up here, you know, very few guys that were even in their league. You know, Dynamite might be one of the most copied guys I've ever seen in the business. You know, I've seen all those you know, flyers from the 80s that emulated him, and none of them duplicated him either, like even Shawn Michaels and, you know, Chris Benoit and Pillman and Liger and guys like that. You know, they idolized him, you know, and he was kind of the cutting edge of all that, you know. And Davey Boy was right up there, you know, as you guys know, when he did the Wembley thing with Brett. You know, it's still considered one of the great matches in WWE history, and it's beyond me why those two guys aren't in the Hall of Fame either. You know, they certainly, you know, warrant inclusion, you know, far more than a lot of the people that have already been inducted. You know, I'm not sure if they're, I have no idea why they haven't been inducted at this time, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd throw a vote in for my old buddy Pillman, too. You know, he was pretty kind of a radical, cutting-edge type, you know, when he was doing that Booker Man stuff with Kevin Sullivan and all like that. He was kind of, I'd say about all those guys that I've been talking about, every one of them was a cutting-edge original. They weren't copies or clones or cheap rip-offs of some other horseshit gimmick or other guy. You know, they all did their own thing, and that's why they were as great as they were, you know. And I'm hopeful that all those guys get in there, because they certainly deserve it.
I agree 100%. I have a question, Bruce, but first I have a statement. I think the big sign of the respect, WWE put out a big DVD set, 20 Greatest Raws of All Time. One of the Raws is the Raw from Germany, the night that Owen Hart and Davey Boy Smith wrestled each other for the European Championship. It was the first European title match. It was the final. And it was one of the best wrestling matches that ever aired on television. From bell to bell, those two guys just went in there, and it just really tore the house down. And I agree with you 100%. All those talents that you mentioned should be in the Hall of Fame. Real quick question. It's been talked about. Brett, years of frustration leaving the WWE. In 2010, something was worked out, and he returned. You were involved in that at WrestleMania, Bruce. Okay, so sitting back in the family after years of all this, just one bad thing after another happening, everybody has seen the Heart and Soul DVD, and it's a really tragic story. But for Brett to go back and have that moment, you're involved, the family's involved, your dad gets inducted, how did it make you, were you happy to see you know, people come together and say, okay, it is what it is, it happened. Let's try to put a key in the lock and lock up this bad blood. Let's do something again. Were you happy about that?
I had mixed vibes about it. You know, on the one sense, you know, I had been advocating, you know, years before that, you know, burying the hatchet. I didn't see any, you know, it was obviously, you know, pretty, you know, serious and you know, incredible loss and all like that with Owen. But I didn't see any point in carrying, you know, they say one of the heaviest burdens one could carry is a grudge. And I didn't see there was any great point in prolonging all the animosity. So for a long time, Brett was the guy who was most adamant about, you know, not burying the hatchet with all, and so with Vinny and WWE and all like that. So I thought it was long overdue, and I give some props to Vince. You know, I think his heart was in the right place for extending the olive branch or endeavoring to kind of, in his own way, you know, kind of build a bridge over troubled water with not only inducting Brett, but my dad as well. You know, it was too bad my dad wasn't alive to enjoy it, but I thought the whole thing was, you know, my estimation for the right reasons. I thought the match itself, I was frankly quite disappointed in it. I remember when they called us in and gave us the lowdown for that match. As soon as I heard it, I thought it was frankly a bunch of crap. You know, I told them that too when they ran the finish by us with Brett beating the crap out of Vince with chairs and claw bars and nut shots and all of that good stuff, the excellence of execution and the supposed best technical wrestler, the best there is or ever will be or whatever, you know, doing nothing but claw bars and nut shots and chair shots. You know, I remember when they ran the finish by us, I think it was Michael Hayes giving it to us, and they asked me what I thought, and I think they're accustomed to everyone obsequiously blowing smoke up their sphincters, but I said, just from my casual perspective, I think it sucks. You know, you got Brett, who's supposedly the you know, preeminent technical wrestler of this generation, doing nothing but nut shots and beating Vince with a chair, and then I said there was no ebb or flow to the whole thing, you know, and just off the top of my head, I told him that, you know, that from my perspective, it made more sense to maybe have Vinny get some heat on Brett, and given that Brett had supposedly, this is his first match back since his stroke, and then they had done some, you know, charade about a couple of weeks before that with Brett getting injured in the back in a limo accident or some contrived crap, you know. So I said, you have all that going down, plus, you know, just off the top of my head, I noticed that Sean and Hunter had some kind of a falling out at Royal Rumble, which cost, like, one of them a shot at the world title. So I said, it's just off the top of my head, you know, I could see a finish where Brett was selling his ass off initially for Vince, you know, since his first match back since he's had the stroke, and play up the drama, you know, is Brett going to survive this? And given that Vinny's the ultra villain and all like that anyway, and I said, finally Brett rallies and gets his sharpshooter on Vinny, and at that point have Stephanie, you know, come running to the ring, take the ref, because daddy's getting, annihilated, and then at that point have Hunter hit the ring and be about to give Brett the pedigree, and at which point, you know, they have the hell freezes over scenario with Shawn Michaels hitting the ring and saving Brett, and I told him it made, you know, would be an intriguing combination of Brett and Shawn against Vinny and Hunter in a tag, you know, say for SummerSlam or something. Oddly enough, they all seem pretty keen on the whole thing, except Brett kind of, you know, claimed that he couldn't have another match because of his Lloyd's of London charade or his policy or something like that. But yeah, that's sort of a long-winded answer to that about that whole thing, you know. But yeah, as I said before, I thought it was a good, you know, initiative on Vinny's part to try to right some of the wrongs, you know. You know, can't bring Owen back, but, you know, at the same time, you know, if you can kind of, you know, mend some of the, you know, kind of the wounds, you know, from the past, and I think Owen being inducted into the Hall of Fame would be a step in that direction, too.
I agree. Mike, are you there?
All right. I'm right here, man. We are getting close to the top of the hour, and unfortunately we are going to have to wrap this up soon. But I did have one more question for you. You've been talking about the need for the territories and the young up-and-coming guys need a place to be able to go and to work and to gain some experience. Who are some of the people that you see now, maybe on the indie circuit or TNA or WWE currently and all that, who are some of the people you see that you think are going to be heading up, they're going to be the next level, they're going to be the future? Is there anyone out there that kind of gets your attention that you think is going to be like the next
guys,
big thing?
You know, I just, quite honestly, just from what I hear, I can't say I've seen some of them, but I've heard really good things about a guy named Bobby Ocean, who's apparently down on the East Coast, and another guy that's been doing the NXT, a guy named Rick Victor, who I hear, you know, he trained up here with us back in the days. I thought, you know, and some of the guys that have sort of been up for the proverbial cup of coffee with Vinny and then went back, you know, I thought John Morrison had a lot more potential, and they let him manifest, and, you know, I think if they brought him back and used him a bit better, he'd be another, you know, great guy. Or same with my nephew Harry. I thought he was completely wasted in his earlier stint in WWE, and he's doing fine in Japan now. Yeah, but he's got a way more talent than I ever saw them let him bring to the surface in WWE. And there's kids up here, my own kids are really, you know, they're every bit as talented as Brett and Owen. We're at that same age, you know, so I could see them, you know, rising to the occasion if they ever get a shot, you know. And that's the thing that the business needs more of right now. They need, I see these guys prematurely being, you know, introduced to, in WWE, some of these big guys like Biggie Langston and Ezekiel and, you know, Ryback and guys like that. And some of them have an awesome look, and they get over pretty good the first time or two. But, you know, the one thing they're lacking is they haven't had any place to learn how to work. And then it becomes painfully obvious after a few matches, and then they seem to just kill them off after that, you know, which isn't fair to them either, you know. There should all, that's one of the other things that they need, you know, territories or places, you know. I see all too often these guys after they sort of, you know, run out of guys to work with and all, they just start squashing, or you know, they just sort of die on the vine. And you know. Instead, they should just send them out. In the old days, you know, you'd have guys, you know, they'd run their course and have their run in a circuit, and then they'd go to another place and be a star somewhere else and come back a year later and they'd still be hot. But nowadays, I see all these guys, I'm even seeing it right now with guys like Dolph Ziggler and Ryback and some of those guys just sort of almost being jobbed or losing their edge. It'd be better if they just sent them someplace where they could, you know, regain their edge and come back 6 months later. It's sort of like what they've done with Batista, you know. Batista was sort of dying on the vine about 5 years ago, and now they brought him back, but it was mostly because he retired back in the day, but that's something I think they need to have. And the other thing I would say is it serves no purpose to have these guys breaking in a place like NXT, you know, exposing all their kind of imperfections, you know. It used to be when you brought a guy in, you know, they have to hit the ground running as like an awe-inspiring superstar when they get there, you know. If you have them, you know, learning and being scrutinized while they're in NXT, and then they try to bring them in as stars, everyone's already seen them, you know, with all their warts and imperfections. This kind of contradicts the whole, you know, purpose.
All right. Well, thank you for that very candid answer. And we have very much enjoyed talking with you tonight, Bruce. We are unfortunately at the top of the hour. We are going to have to bring this to a close as we head into our second hour. I would like to say we would like to have you back on again sometime to hear some more stories about, you know, Stuart, you know, your father, the family, the dungeon, Hart Brothers University.
Yeah, I appreciate the buying, and it's been nice talking to you. If there's any people out there that you think have some potential, let us know. And if there's anyone out there listening that is serious about getting into wrestling, we'd love to hear from them. You know, we're in the process, as I said, of, you know, re-sowing the seeds at the grassroots, and we got things really rocking and rolling up here right now, so I'm very confident we'll have another generation of people like Brett and Dynamite and Davey and Pillman and Owen and Benoit and Liger and all like that up here, you know, so you know, if there's anyone out there that's serious about wrestling, you know, love to hear from them. You know, this is, you know, be happy to get them started.
All right. Well, if you have any contact information, you can send it to me or to David, and we'll get that out on the air for you. I'm sure there's got to be some people out there that would jump at that opportunity. And as I said,
this is a real deal. This is, you know, I'm saddened to see it, but there's not too many places anymore that, you know, there's not too many of the old guard left. So if they're serious about the business, I always hate to sound like I'm talking about old school, because almost all the guys, I don't want people thinking we're talking about wool tights and black boots, you know. Most of the guys I'm talking about were as dynamic and spectacular and cutting edge as it gets, you know, the Owens and the Benoits and the Pillmans and some of those guys, Dynamite. So, you know, we're pretty cutting edge as far as the type of wrestling and the style. So I hope they recognize that.
All right, well, Bruce, it's been great talking to you. And like I said, we'll have you on again soon. Thank you for joining us this evening.
All the best, guys. You take care. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
You too.
Thank you. All right, everyone. That was Bruce Hart from Hart Brothers University and the Hart family. Great to have him on as a guest. We will definitely have him on again soon. Brian, I hear you're still on the air. Thank you for joining up with me earlier tonight to help out. David's here now. Like I said, if you'd like to stick around, you got a couple questions for Billy, feel free.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Anyway, David, do you have a jump up on your little soapbox and make you feel yourself feel about 5 feet taller. So anything on your mind tonight, anything you'd like to talk about?
Anytime I can feel 5 feet taller, it is a good day. Now I just want to we had a big announcement this past week. We're going to be announcing our 2015 IHWE Hall of Fame class in the upcoming week. We want to get the announcement. We want to get the people out there as soon as possible. We don't wait around. And, of course, the big announcement a few weeks ago was the Von Erich family is being inducted as a family into the Hall of Fame, the Texas Wrestling Hall of Fame, which is really big. This Hall of Fame was started years ago. It started up very small. Faced a lot of scrutiny. Still does. But it's okay. I had a long conversation with Troy Peterson, and he is a part of the Dan Gable Museum in Waterloo. And he told me something very important. He said, don't let anybody discourage you. He said, there's still people out there who discourage us, and we've been doing this for years. So don't let anybody out there discourage you. So that was nice to hear. So we do this because we love the business. It's a day to embrace, honor our legends of Texas. And I was very happy to announce Tim Storm, who has been wrestling here in Texas for years. He is the current traditional championship wrestling champion. We can be seen every week on the Pursuit Channel and in about 100 different markets across the United States. TCWWrestling.com, Traditional Championship Wrestling, if you want to see Tim Storm. And he's going to be the newest member of the IHWE Texas Wrestling Hall of Fame in 2015. I met Tim in 2001. He's a gentleman with a lot of character. He's an awesome performer. He's a really good man, and he's going to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. And we will have other names for you in the upcoming weeks. And also, we're going to plan on getting everybody on as guests also. Coming up next week, we have Rob Schamberger, who's a critically acclaimed wrestling artist. He takes his passion for wrestling, his incredible talent for art, and combines them. And I believe today or yesterday, his paintings were on WWE. They were on the WWE auction site. He had pictures of Kofi Kingston and other superstars with paintings he had done of them. And you can go on the WWE auction page and bid on them, which is really, really cool. Rob's going to be on here next week, the following week, February 19th. We have Kevin Von Erich, 2015 IHWE Wrestling Hall of Famer, member of the Von Erich Dynasty down here in Texas. He's going to be a guest in February 26th. Michael is going to be involved with an upcoming show, I believe, in California. We're going to be talking about that. And we're going to do something really cool. We're going to actually air a archived interview that I conducted in 2008 with 2011. IHWE Hall of Famer, my friend, the late, great General Skandar Akbar. Akbar called in that day. We talked for about 15 minutes. He was very cool. And actually, the day that he called, I believe, was just a few weeks after Gary Hart had passed away. So we'll get to hear, Akbar's thoughts on Gary Hart's passing after they happened. And you'll get to hear Ak being Ak. If people didn't get to hear him just talk and not in a wrestling promo, there's not much difference. The voice is still the same. He was really, really cool. And one of the better things in life I did was I got to hang out with General Skandar Akbar. So that will be on here on February 26th. And then come March, we'll be getting ready for WrestleMania. We'll be getting ready for the IHWE Hall of Fame. And off and on, we'll be having guests of the Cauliflower Alley Club on to get ready for that in June. So a lot of good things coming on. You got something you want to promote, get with me, get with Michael. Come on here like Bruce Hart just did. It was really cool having Bruce Hart on here. But nothing's really on my mind, dude. I mean, the same things have been going around. CM Punk still, chilling, doing his thing. Not a whole lot. I think things are going to pan out, hopefully. Excited about the network. It's really cool to get to watch all that good wrestling. So I'm good. Like I said, you try to run my son to the doctor. He's fine. But I mean to leave you guys hanging. But, it's cool. I get it. Can't live without me, Michael. I get it. It's cool. I understand. In a few weeks, you'll be taking over this show. So it's all good.
No.
You're staying with me, man. We're in this together. You're not leaving me.
All right, well, we should be waiting for Bill to be calling in any minute, Bill Anderson. So while we're waiting on him, yeah, I guess we'll just banter. This is live radio. Oh, I believe we have a caller on right now. I believe that's Bill. All right, Michael, take it away.
All right. Hopefully you are correct. We are on the Wonders of Live Radio. I believe we are being joined by our second guest of the evening. Bill, is this you?
Yes, sir, it sure is.
All right, yeah, ladies and gentlemen,
Phoenix,
we are joined
Arizona.
By...
Hello, Bill.
We are being joined by Bill Anderson. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a real honor to be on the show, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, anytime. We're glad to have you. I was telling some of the listeners earlier, you've got two books out, I believe. One is The School of Wrestling, and the other one is Big Bill Anderson Remembers the Fallen Friends of Wrestling. You also,
yes,
I believe, have a book coming out, correct?
I'm working on a third book. It's actually a non-wrestling book. I'm kind of torn between working on another wrestling book and a book that's actually on Hollywood history. I'm big on the old days of Hollywood, which is totally non-wrestling related on this show. But I have a passion for the old Hollywood actors and some of their mysterious deaths and some macabre things like that that have happened in old Hollywood. But my books on wrestling, I find, are pretty interesting, and especially this last one I did, which was my the book is a tribute to fallen wrestlers that have passed away, and to 27 people that I had the space to write about in this first book about that subject, and great men like Red Bastien and Road Warrior Hawk and the Big Boss Man and Randy Savage and Andre the Giant and Bruiser Brody. And it goes on and on. Some just greats of the business that were friends of mine that I spent time with on the road. And I wrestled many of these guys. And Red Bastien and I shared an apartment together back in the old days. I'm sorry?
We seem to be picking up some background noise here. I'm not quite sure what that was.
Sorry, guys. I had my phone muted. I was talking to my wife, like I said. So continue. We are professionals, ladies and gentlemen. This is live radio. We are professionals. This is what makes our show better than anybody else's, because you don't know what's going to happen. Because we do go off the cuff.
Yes, welcome to the world of chaos.
It's an honor to have you on. We've talked over the past few days. We talked about Johnny Valentine and such. It's really cool to speak to you. Breaking into the business, when did you do it? How did it come about? Who did you meet to break into the business? Tell our listeners about that.
Okay, well, I started out just as a regular wrestling fan, like so many of the boys did in the old days and probably still do. And this was in 1973 here in Phoenix, where I live now. And Kurt Von Steiger, who was part of a brother tag team, Kurt and Carl Von Steiger, Kurt is the man that trained me in 73. And it really started kind of as a fluke almost, because I just happened to be late getting picked up from one of his wrestling shows he was promoting in Phoenix. And he asked me to help tear the ring down, because him and his wife were doing it by themselves. So I started helping with the ring, and one thing led to another, and I realized he would train me for wrestling. And I trained with him, and Bobby Jaggers was one of the students in that class, and so was Sika. From the Wild Samoans. He was part of our class, too, back in 73. And that's how I broke in, was through Kurt Von Steiger here in Phoenix. And then I had my first match in 1974, and then kind of went from there, and then went to Tennessee in 1975 working for Jerry Jarrett and Nick Goulas. And that was a great experience for me. Which was really the catalyst for why when I had the opportunity with Red Bastien to train Sting in the Ultimate Warrior in 1985, I had an opportunity to send them guys to work for Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett at the time. They had sent photos in, and they said, "Do you recommend us going down there?" And I says, "I recommend that area very highly." I says, I kind of got my start there in my rookie year, and I said, it's a great place to get experience in the South there. You wrestle a good variety of guys. You wrestle every night of the week, and that's the experience you need. And I think that's what really helped lay the groundwork for Steve Borden and Jim Hellwig to do as well future that they were able to do was laying the groundwork in Tennessee, working for Jarrett and Lawler. So that's kind of like where I started, you know.
Now, you brought up the Ultimate Warrior and Sting. We were talking about both of them earlier this evening. Two questions. One, what is your opinion on Sting sometime coming to the WWE? Do you think that would be a good move for him? And also, what is your thoughts on the Ultimate Warrior going into the Hall of Fame this year? As you said, you did train both of these men, so
right.
I would assume you have kind of kept tabs on, you know, maybe stay in contact with him, but your opinions on all this?
I've seen Sting at some Athletes International Ministry conferences through the years. We've stayed in touch far better than I have with Jim Hellwig, who I guess is just the Warrior now. I guess that's his legal name. I don't know, Jim Warrior or something like that. Here's my opinion. There is absolutely no denying the attendance that Jim, or let's just say the Ultimate Warrior, set. Attendance records Jim set wrestling against Paul Orndorff and against Hulk Hogan and things like that. He drew houses. There's no doubt about that. He had his outs with Vince, no different than many people have, which is why Randy Savage hadn't been put in for all these years for that same reason. So there's no denying that Jim Hellwig is qualified to be in the Hall of Fame as a lot of people are. I mean, he did some good money numbers for Vince. There's nothing wrong with that. And as far as Sting going into WWF or WWE at this time, it's kind of I have a weird feeling about it because, first of all, Steve Borden is he's a lot older. He's at the very end of his career, let's face it. I mean, he's in good shape. There's no doubt about it. But he's toward the end of his career. He's obviously going to have to work a lighter schedule. Vince isn't going to put him on the road every day. That was one of the things that kept Steve from doing this all these years, is he didn't want to be on the road every day away from his family. He's a good family man, and he respects his wife and kids, and he wants to be with them, and he loves them. So to go on the road full-time, I don't see that happening. I've never seen that happening with Steve. He's a unique individual. He doesn't play by everybody else's rules. Kind of sets his own rules, no different than the Warrior did in his own way. So I think if Vince gets him, which Vince has always wanted him because it's a good coup for him to finally get Sting after all these years, no doubting what Sting's past record has been in the business. He was, you know, multi-time world champion. He did his own thing very well for himself. Good man. But I just don't see him working full-time for Vince. Whatever that is, I just don't see it. Maybe on some better schedule than like The Undertaker has, one match a year, five matches a year, whatever he's got. He'll be on a limited schedule. I just don't see it any other way. That's my opinion.
Let me jump in here. I agree 100%, Bill. First of all, the Ultimate Warrior. Okay, folks, you want to talk about the Hall of Fame? Okay, here's my two cents. I'm a longtime wrestling fan, like Bill was, broke into the business years ago. Bill has had the wonderful opportunity to actually have a hand in the Warrior and Sting's, you know, getting to where they're at, which is awesome. The Ultimate Warrior, Bill is correct. He sold tickets. He drew houses. He is one of those characters that everybody remembers when they were a kid. He's one of those characters like Hogan, like Andre, like Jake, like Macho Man. He's one of those characters that we all grew up and loved. When we were kids, we didn't care if he went 25 minutes every night. We didn't care about work rate. Jim had a different edge. It doesn't mean he was a bad worker, because when Jim was in there with somebody who could, Jim was good at certain things and some things. Hey, there's a lot of guys in this business that need a little help getting through good matches. It doesn't lessen their value. One of the greatest matches of all time is Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior from WrestleMania 7. The career match. This is one of those matches with so much emotion. I love that match, and I'll put that match up against any other match from that era. Jim went in there with Hogan and had a really good match. I think Jim needs to be recognized. any time two people who've had bad blood for years to put it aside, come together, and have a moment. In this business, we lose somebody almost every day. So any time that people can come together and say, you know what, yeah, we had heat, let's get past it, let's do something nice, I think it's wonderful. So for Jim to get a moment, the speech is going to be worth, I hope it's on the network. I want to see the Warrior speech. That's going to be fantastic. I'm glad you're back.
It should be interesting.
Yeah, and as far as Steve goes, I agree. He's not going to be on the road full time. He's not going to be Daniel Bryan, but I would love to see Sting finish up in the WWE. He can get his Hall of Fame induction. We can get a legitimate DVD release with a documentary with a lot of his matches. And I just, he tried so hard, and he put so many years into TNA. God bless him for that. He didn't go for the money. He went to help a company, but I've never heard a bad thing about Sting. Never heard a bad thing about him.
Right.
So
that loyalty came from when he worked for Jeff Jarrett's dad. That's
right.
Where that loyalty came from to begin with. And Steve is a man of his word, and he really felt very committed to that promotion for so many years that it's just been, in my humble opinion, so mismanaged.
Yeah.
Over those last several years. I don't care what you do, you never, never let AJ Styles. You never let him go from your company, ever.
Correct.
He was one hell of a wrestler. One of my favorites
franchise.
That I used to love to watch. Exactly. You never let him go. You give him what he wants and keep him. To let him go was a tragic mistake.
He's the Sting of TNA. He's the Sting.
Exactly.
The franchise of TNA,
They just didn't know what they were doing. But, you know, your points about both Sting and Warrior are right on the money. I agree with you 100%. Because, you know, let's face it, when was the last time you saw George the Animal Steel back in the 60s and 70s have a classic match? That wasn't the point. He was a character. And that's what drew money, and people loved to see it. I love to see it, you know, and everything. That's the same way Jim was. And don't ever think for a minute that Jim didn't learn holds and training, learn how to do drop kicks, learn how to do this, learn how to do that, no different than Sting did. The Angel of Death, Dave Sheldon, was in this class. Strangler Steve DeSalvo was in this class. They all learned how to wrestle. What their gimmicks became is what a lot of promoters kind of pushed on them, and just figured this is the best way out of whatever situation, use this gimmick with this guy. But Jim knew how to wrestle. Was he ever going to put a top wrist lock on anybody? No, he didn't need to. Vince would have been upset with him if he had done it.
Right.
And that's why his gimmick was run to the ring. And I worked on 100 shows in a row probably where he did the thing with Andre the Giant where he pinned him before like the bell even rang out here. On the West Coast especially, they did those in every arena. And it was like a 5, 6, 7, 8, 10-second match. That was the gimmick. That was what it was. It wasn't supposed to be a Bob Backlund match. It was
the
gimmick.
Andre, at that point, he couldn't get those kind of matches. He couldn't get through the match.
Yeah.
Unless it was like,
yeah.
God bless Andre. Andre is one of the greatest. He's the reason I started watching wrestling. He's one of the greatest attractions of all time.
No doubt about it.
And give Jim the rub. It's fantastic. And Bill, much to what you were saying, how many wrestlers have we seen over the years that go in there and give us those 30-minute matches that apply those top wrist locks? But a lot of them, what do they miss? They miss that it thing to draw the money, and that's what Jim can do.
Exactly. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. You know, you think back into the 80s, I'll tell you, like a quick draw Rick McGraw or a Terry Gibbs or some of the opening match guys that Vince used in the 80s, early 80s, they could outwork Jim 5 times over, but they never drew a dime. And that's no slight to them. It's just part of what life is. You know, everybody, it can't be the star of a movie. You're always going to have your cast that goes way down the list to the 30th person listed in that number. And that's just where some people are. And Jim had the it ability. You're right. Jim knew how to draw people. And whether it's steroid related or whatever, that's the price his body will pay down the road or whatever if that is the fact. I can't say it is or not. I never saw him do it. Who knows? That goes with Hogan or goes with any of them, for that matter. So, but they drew money, and there's no denying it. And let's face it, look at Bruno Sammartino, who was a complete legend in the business. He gave in last year and did the Hall of Fame thing. And it's just, like you said, it's for the best of the business that a lot of these guys do it, because what kind of a Hall of Fame is it without some of these guys in it, especially Bruno?
Right.
You know, Bruno belonged in there if anybody ever did. Champion from 63 to 71, uninterrupted, alone.
Right.
That's just an incredible run he had that no one could ever do again. It will never be duplicated in the history of our business, ever. But those were the days. And Bruno was a draw and a hell of a guy. And he had the charisma, and he had the Italian people and everybody else behind him in the New York and New England area in particular in those days. But, you know, there's no denying.
I'll say one more thing.
I'll
say one more thing, and I'll hand it over back to Michael. That's what makes our business beautiful is our show. Well, I say our show. The show has guys who can go in there from bell to bell, put on all the holds, and then there's guys like the Warrior. There's guys like Hogan. There's guys like Cena. There's guys like that who go in there. They put on a show. It's a different kind of match, but they connect with the fans more. There's nothing wrong with a guy who can go in there and go 45 minutes and apply every wrestler hold that ever was put out. There's nothing wrong with that, and there's nothing wrong with a guy who can go on there, yell at the TV, yell at the people at home, and make them go, hey, let's go down to the Armory Friday night and see this guy. This guy's crazy. There's nothing, it's a variety, and that's what makes our business better than anything else. We have a variety of performers.
Exactly. I agree 100%. That's the way it especially used to be, far more than I think today it is, but that's just my opinion. I just, I loved it business as it used to be, because not everybody looked the same on a card. You had your Ox Bakers or your Haystacks Calhouns or whatever. You had the Midgets, which are an obsolete part of the business almost anymore, you know, and you had real women wrestlers that knew how to wrestle and weren't all silicone too. No offense to some of the great ladies that are out there today, but it's just the way it is, you know. Moolah wasn't considered eye candy, but could she work? Hell yeah, she could. And a lot of girls just like her. You know, I was in love with a lot of those women back in those days when I started. And Casey.
One of the best.
Oh, yeah. And May was a beautiful woman in her younger days, and she was one hell of a tough wrestler. There's a lot of them, and I love the old women wrestlers. You know, they were great, a great attraction to a show, and they weren't just used as TNA, not TNA promotion, but TNA to just approve around the ring and be silicone out there. Yeah, and that's what I miss a little bit about the business, the way it used to be, and I just miss the old characters, you know, and the way it is now. No denying a guy like Daniel Bryan is just one hell of a wrestler, and an AJ Styles, those kind of guys are great. It's just, you know, it's still, you need some of the characters, you know, of the business. That's what made pro wrestling what it was, in my opinion. And I kind of miss that. I didn't have a gimmick, personally. I was just an all-American kind of skinny kid when I first started, before I started working under a mask and things like that in Mexico and Japan. But I didn't have a fancy gimmick. And because you got to go with what your body is allowing you to go with. Some people have natural charisma to go in a certain direction and others don't. Warrior, you know, God bless the guy, man. He took off with what Vince and him figured out was the best way for him to work his gimmick and his body style and everything. And he made a hell of a lot of money. And so did Vince from it. And the people were entertained. And the same goes with a guy like superstar Billy Graham, you know, and a lot of these guys. And I'm seeing Billy tomorrow. I'm having a lunch with superstar. And these guys knew what it was about and how to have charisma. You know, Billy's 72 years old. He still has charisma. He attracts crowds in the restaurant we go to every time.
He can cut a promo better than half the guys on TV.
He certainly can. He certainly can. It's just amazing, you know, but that was the way it was. And, you know, I'm a little more old school than I am current on current topic, with a lot of this, what's going on. But I am aware, like you said, about Jim going into the Hall of Fame and Sting signing and things like that. I think it's wonderful for the fans. It's some matchups that have never been done before. That their fans are going to see some cool things in the future. And Steve loves the business. He has great respect for the business. So it's going to be fantastic.
Now, you're talking charisma. Yes, I'm still here. You're
okay.
Talking charisma and all that. You mentioned superstar and all that. I'm glad to hear he's doing well. Just a quick little story I got to share. I haven't had a chance to tell David this one. Billy, do you remember just, two, 3 years ago at the Cauliflower Reunion, I believe it was you, Superstar, myself, ODB, Awesome Kong, at TGI Friday until, what was it, 4 in the morning? The waiters were afraid to tell Superstar we had to leave.
Yeah, and you don't want to know what happened at the beginning of that cauliflower in that restaurant with the girls that came up to us. Wanting autographs. It was pretty crazy. We won't talk about that on the air, though. But Michael, I'll be happy to tell you about it when I see you. Some craziness.
I'll support that. But I just remember,
all
sitting there. Waiters would come in and try to, Superstar would just say a couple words here and there, and they just walk away. He basically ran that. We were the only people in that restaurant at one point. They finally had to come in and tell us they had to close for a couple hours to clean up. They finally had to kick us out.
Yes. I remember that. I was rooming with them. God help me. Yes, I remember. That was a quite insane few days. That was in 2009. That was like 4 years ago. It's hard to believe it was that long ago.
That was the weekend that I had my encounter with the Iron Sheik, which was due in part to Superstar Billy Graham.
Oh, did we all have an encounter with the Iron Sheik, myself included?
I had an encounter with him that same weekend. Very good, thanks. And I was on the outs with Iron Sheik, like a lot of people have been over the years. And I thought he didn't like me, and I thought I didn't like him. And that weekend, we kind of made up. And I was very happy about it because, again, in a much smaller scale than anything Vince McMahon does, it was something that you have to put aside disagreements in the ring and things that happened. And we had an argument, myself and the Sheik, many years ago in California on a show back in the mid-90s. And it was just absolutely amazing when he saw that I was sitting with Billy Graham before the banquet at the Baloney Blowout there. Billy says, "Hey, Sheik, you know my friend Bill Anderson here." And he goes, "Bill, you got to love my Iron Sheik imitation." He goes, Bill Anderson, I know, I love Bill Anderson. Where's Bill Anderson? Where is he?" Billy goes, he's right here. And he goes, "Oh, my God." And he comes over and gives me a kiss on the cheek and everything. And it was like, I thought we hated each other. And turns out we loved each other. That's the business. That's the CAC, the Ring of Friendship. And I think that tells you more about what Cauliflower Alley Club can do than anything else, is it can put up, they say, you put aside your differences and you become friends there. And whether real or imaginary differences of opinion, you become friends there. And I have done that time and time again with people through the years. Because I've been in the business, for almost 40 years off and on here. And it's just, you come across people that you think you didn't like or didn't like you, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're hugging and kissing, and it's like you've become long-lost buddies. And I love it. I love it. In fact, 6 months later, I had a picture of Sheik hanging up in my bedroom, of all things, of me and him together. I never thought, you couldn't have told me that you would have paid me $20,000 to have hung a picture of him up a year before. And it would have been impossible for me to imagine. And there I am. There I'm hanging a picture up. There's me and Sheik. And it was just because you become friends, and you are friends, and you put aside your differences. No difference than Vince and with Bruno last year, with Ultimate Warrior this year. It's good business. It really is. And I'm happy that I was able to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about the Cauliflower Alley Club, and like, say, in April 2012, I received the Red Vest in Friendship Award, and I was the last person to receive it while Red was still alive. And I think Gordy Enko had told me Carol was in the audience. She was tears streaming down her face when I mentioned him in my speech. And, of course, we lost Red August 11, 2012, 81, Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And now this year, John Arthur Lowe, he's going to be the first person to receive the award since Bastien's death. I mean, can you mention a little bit about Red and just how much of an influence he's been? I mean, I had no idea how much love he had for the boys in tangible and non-tangible ways. I mean, the Texas Shootout coming out, that was something he started.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Red, you know, I first met Red in 1984, I want to say. Maybe it was 83. When Vince first expanded to California, it was actually in March of 83, because I worked on all the shows, WWF shows in the West Coast. They were doing Sacramento, San Francisco, Oakland, Fresno, Bakersfield, L.A., San Diego, Anaheim, Long Beach, a whole series of cities. And Red came out as a road agent originally, like with Chief J. Strongbow and Rene Goulet and Jack Lanza and several different guys. And that's where I first met Red. And I just, what I remember when I first met him was when Red spoke, everybody listened in the dressing room. Of course, it was a great group of boys in those days. You know, you had Bob Backlund and Greg Valentine. So everybody knew who Red Bastien was. But everyone listened. And Red didn't have to talk long and talk loud. When he said something, they listened. And I became very close with Red during this time. I looked at him as a father figure, as an older brother, however you want to say it. I looked at him as my mentor. He gave me a lot of sound advice got me on some independent bookings. He was involved with some things with Playboy Buddy Rose up in the San Francisco area, some shows, and he had me and a bunch of guys drive from Southern California up to the Bay Area for some shows with Steve Pardee and Buddy Rose and Alexis Smirnoff and a lot of guys. And Red just became a real good friend. And when I was going through a divorce in 1985, I was living back here in Phoenix at the time, and I called Red, and I was flying back and forth for WWF shows to California because I was wrestling on these shows at that time before I later became a ring announcer for them also. And I said, Red, I want to come back to California. I got nowhere to stay. Can you suggest anything? And he said, brother, I've got one hell of a big one-bedroom apartment, and I got two beds in my bedroom. You are more than welcome to live with me for as long as you need. And that's the kind of guy Red was. Took me right in, and I moved back over to Los Angeles, lived with Red, and Red says, I'm putting a class together. I got Rick Bassman has given me a check to train some guys. He says, I can't physically get in the ring and do it a lot anymore. Got artificial hips. And like Red always said, the mind is willing, but the body isn't. And he says, I can talk their way through a lot, but I need a guy in there to take bumps for these guys. I need a guy in there that's young and agile and can work with him. And I got six great athletes that are in there, and I need somebody to work. And he says, will you do me that honor and get in the ring with these guys? And he says, you got a free place to stay and for as long as you need it, and get in there and train with these guys. And I said, sure, Red, whatever you need, brother. And we worked with these guys, and that's the kind of influence Red had on me. I would do whatever the man asked me. For a $50 payoff, I drove 1,200 miles one time for him, each way. I mean, who would do that? But you know what? That's just the way the business was in those days. You did crazy things. And whatever Red asked me to do, I felt there was a reason behind it, or Red wouldn't have asked. And I can't tell you how many times I was around Red where we laughed until we cried. We bonded with each other so well, and Red was just a hero to me. Never got to see the man wrestle live like I did so many other guys in the business, or wrestle on shows with them. Red was one that escaped my career, my part of my career, but where I was at, he was at another part of the country. But I tell you what, I've seen matches of Red's on tapes. He was just one hell of a worker. His flying head scissors is unequaled by anybody. And Red is just my hero. And when he became president of CAC, it was a great moment. He led the club to a great, just a respect level from the boys, because they knew if Red Bastien was involved, it was something very, very good to be involved with, to show up and be a part of at the banquet or be honored by Red and his group of board of directors at the time. And it was just a respected organization, even that much more with Red. Now we got Nick Bockwinkel, which Nick speaks for himself. He's one of the greats. And, you know, so it's just, Red is just, he's the man. And to the day I die, I don't expect to ever hear anybody say anything negative about Red Bastien. He's just like, to me, like Professor Toro Tanaka was, who was one of my very dear friends that I wrote about in this book, this last book I did. No one ever says anything bad about Professor Tanaka, because there's nothing you can say bad. You can knock a lot of people in the business for bad things they might have done to people, or whatever incidents they had, or drug problems, or this or that, but no one says anything bad about a Red Bastien or about a guy like Professor Tanaka, who was a gentle soul. And Red was just a wise man, and Red taught me a lot. And he was like you say, he was like a father to me. Red used to always say he was more like an older brother, but that's just the way Red was. He still makes me laugh when I think about him. Every phone call I ever had with the man led to laughter, and many times led to tears, because we'd laugh so long and so hard about something, remembering things. We used to go to Dodger baseball games. Red loved the Dodgers. We used to go watch the Dodgers play many, many times in L.A., and I just have very fond memories of the man. He's a legend, and the Texas shootout that's this weekend, I had originally planned on coming and had to back out this Saturday. I was going to try to make it down to Dallas for that, and I could not do it after all. But it's a great thing that Johnny Mantell has put together and running now in honor of Red, the Texas Red. Red Bastien suit out, and I think it's a great way to honor Red every year there in Dallas. And one of the main reasons I wanted to come out to Dallas was to go to Red's grave, and I just want to sit there and shed some tears with Red over this grave. And I wanted to do that more than anything this weekend, and I'm going to have to put it off for a month or two and
Bill,
just come out there another time.
Bill, to jump in here, like I said, we just met a few days ago, but I wanted to tell you about what we're doing. We also, James Beard and I, run the Texas Wrestling Hall of Fame. It's very similar to the shootout, but it's not the same, because we don't want to try to run something that would be disrespectful to what Red started. What we do is we have a gathering, kind of like the shootout, but instead of just a gathering, we do awards. It's a Hall of Fame ceremony, but it's just for the wrestlers and their families.
Mm-hmm.
Our event is March 15th here in Fort Worth. So if you would like, I can, after the show's over with, I can give you that information. We're honoring Stan Hansen this year. We're honoring Terry Gordy, Gorgeous Gary Young. A lot of people are going to be there. And we do it every year here. We don't do it for profit. It's not anything we make money off of.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, the Von Erichs are going in. That's something I've been doing the last few years, because, like I said, I've broken by Johnny Valentine, and I want to do it to honor the great lineage of this state, people
sure.
like Red and, you know, so far. So if you want, after the show's over with, I'll get you all that information. And if you were planning on coming down next month, you could come see everybody, you know, at the Hall of Fame if you would like. So you can
be
my
guest
if you'd like.
That is very awesome. I appreciate that. That is very awesome.
Not a problem.
Yeah, I have great respect for reunions and get-togethers like that, and it's a great thing where the guys can get together and talk about their careers and have some fun and a little nostalgia for them, and it's really good, you know. It's we have to do things like that while we're still able, you know. Red had Alzheimer's. We just lost the great Louis Martinez recently. It was big around the Detroit area in particular. Arriba Luis Martinez, and Martinez, he had Alzheimer's also, and you know, we have to do these things while we still remember who we are, you know, and it's just
right.
you know, we spend a lot of years in the ring entertaining people and making friends, and I think that's probably, if I had a gimmick, that would be the only gimmick I ever had, was making a hell of a lot of friends and trying to keep my name as good as I could keep it and make a lot of friends in the business. And, you know, that's why I cherish going to, like, you know, CAC and reunions in particular, because you get to see so many of your old buddies and guys you traveled up and down the road with, and or guys you just respected. You never even wrestled on, against them. You just respected them, and you know, and it's so great. I'll see what I can do about coming out there for March, and it's very possible.
Do you have an inbox with all the information waiting for you on Facebook?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And you know, if anybody, if you don't mind, if I just give a shout out to my website, and if anybody wants to purchase my two books, I have. The first book is on my students that I train, and there's some rare pictures of Sting and the Warrior in there. Louis Spicoli was another guy that wrestled around Dallas there for a while and wrestled all over. He was with WCW when he passed away. He was one of my students that I trained in 1988, one of my best friends, dearest, greatest guys I've ever known in my life. Made it such an influence, impacting influence on my life. He's in the book, and a lot of my other students. Frankie Kazarian was a guy that came through my school after being trained originally with Killer Kowalski, but he came through my school to finish up his training. And a lot of guys, Christopher Daniels, Chris Jericho, and The Godfather actually came through my school and did some workouts and did things. So did Rowdy Piper years later, and years ago, I mean, back in the 80s. And, you know, so I have a lot of rare pictures that are in the book, and that's in my first book, and then my second book is my tribute book. And you can go on my website, which is www.dickbillanderson.com. It's real simple. And people can click on, there's a link for both the books, and click on the link for, also Superstar Billy Graham wrote the foreword for my last book and my tribute book, and he'll sign every copy of the book too. And that's what I'm going to have him do actually at lunch tomorrow. He's got some pictures and some books to sign for me. And he gladly does this as a favor to me, and we've been old friends and for many years. I just wrote the foreword for his book that's going to be coming out later this year, his final book of his life called Self-Portrait. And I was honored when Billy asked me to write the foreword for his book. You know, like I always tell people, it's one thing for Bill Anderson to get the foreword done for his book by a superstar, like a superstar Billy Graham. But it's a whole other thing for a superstar, Billy Graham, to ask Bill Anderson to do the foreword. And I'm very well aware of the difference of names and drawing abilities and everything else, so I am completely honored. And I'm not going to lie, I shed tears when Billy asked me, because I don't think it gets much bigger and better than that kind of stuff, to be recognized by your peers. And, you know, it goes back to, after the late Eddie Guerrero passed away, to find out that he put me in his book, he mentions me in his book, and guys like Jimmy Valiant being in his book, things like that. These were my heroes, you know. I mean, I knew Eddie for many years, but Jimmy Valiant, I mean, I was the biggest fan in the world of this guy, and then met him one time, had lunch with him. 10-15 years later, we run into each other at CAC. I'll tell you the story real quick. Run into each other. And as I'm walking toward him, maybe 20 feet away from him, he goes, "Big Bill Anderson." And I looked at him like, "What? You remember me?" I said, "Jimmy, are you serious?" And he goes, "Brother, Big Bill Anderson, come over here and give me a hug and a kiss." So I go over and we hug and we kiss each other's cheeks. I said, "Jimmy, I was walking down here because I want to buy one of your books." He says, "You better buy it. You're in it." And I go, "What do you mean I'm in it? I'm in a book by Jimmy Valiant." And he turns right to the page, and there's a big paragraph talking about how one of his best friends was Big Bill Miller, and he talks about how when he met Big Bill Anderson, I reminded him of his old buddy Big Bill Miller. We're having lunch, and he's talking about us, and I was in shock. Jimmy Valiant has got the greatest memory of any man in the business ever. And I was so impressed, so happy. And Jimmy bought my book the last time I saw him. He walked over, threw $20 down on the table. He said, "Brother, I want to buy one of your books." I said, "Jimmy, are you sure?" And he goes, "Brother, you bought my book. I'm buying your book." And, you know, that's respect, man. That's an honor. And I love it, you know. And a guy like Jimmy Valiant is just the greatest. Love him. And that's what CAC is all about, that kind of thing, that kind of memories you make. And you're meeting people, your legends, your friends, and you're renewing friendships. It's fantastic. Getting back to my books, if anybody wants to buy them, they can go on my website, and they can go through PayPal. Or if fans are listening, and they can look me up on Facebook also and contact me. I'm just under Bill Anderson there, and I'll try to answer everybody's messages and or requests for friendships and that sort of thing. I try to do the best I can with it. Hey, and one thing, Michael, I've been wanting to tell you this. I haven't officially told you. You know, did you know you were the very actual, very first person that bought my second book?
I was?
Yes. You were the first person when I put it out there on Amazon.
Yeah, I bought it through Amazon, so I need to get it signed.
Yes, that's why you didn't get it signed, because it went through Amazon, unfortunately. And it was before I had my webmaster get it up on my website, because I didn't want people to really buy them, but I wanted to get it out there. But I didn't want people to buy it on Amazon because I had no control over it, like signing it or anything, because they send it right from their company, which I lose the control over, like having Superstar sign it or me sign it. And that's the only thing I regretted, but I've been meaning to tell you that you're the first person who bought my book. So that's kind of a cool thing to me.
That's awesome.
And
folks, if you want to go to the IHWE Facebook page, if you're a fan, it's facebook.com/IHWEProWrestling. After the show, we will have a link directly to Bill's website. For his website, you can go look at his books, you can go purchase his books, just go to our Facebook page if you would like. If you need to get a link from it, or if you're listening to the show and sometimes it's hard to hear, go to the facebook.com/IHWProWrestling, and we will put Bill's link up for his website directly after the show and get a couple books. And Bill, if you come down for the Hall of Fame, bring both your books. I'll buy them both.
Okay. That's a fair deal. I'll be happy to do that. And I'll let you know shortly if I'm able to do that. You know, at this stage of my life, I'm working a regular job in my senior years here, and so it's I got to see if I can take the time off. But I would love to, love to come to Texas. I have a lot of friends in Texas, and it's a cool place, great history place for wrestling, one of the greatest states ever.
Yes,
so,
sir.
You know, I'm well aware of the history of Texas wrestling, and I will let you know about that. But I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. It's a real honor, and
anytime.
You know, it's been fantastic and everything. And
you have an open invitation, Bill. Anytime, just get in touch with me or Mike. Anytime you want to come on, you have an open invitation, open door. Anytime, as much as you want.
Well, you guys are awesome, and I appreciate what I really appreciate with you guys is your respect that you have for the business, and you know, and it's really cool. And not because I trained the Ultimate Warrior, that doesn't have anything to do with what I'm going to say now, but I really appreciate your intelligent insight as to why Vince should allow him in the Hall of Fame, and not like I've heard through Facebook, through a lot of fans, that have a lot of negative things about Warrior. You know, trying to compare him to, let's just throw out the Daniel Bryan thing again, trying to compare him to this or that, and it's completely like comparing bananas and oranges. You know, you can't even do it. It's a whole different ball game. You know, it's like trying to compare Haystacks Calhoun to Andre the Giant's working ability
right.
in the ring. You know, they're
right.
totally different animals, you know. It's a different thing. But, you know, you have a smart approach to realism of what the Hall of Fame is. It's recognition of somebody's what they've accomplished in the business. And there's no doubt Jim Hellwig, the Ultimate Warrior, was a success in the WWF. No doubt about it. His main events were numerous, and his draws, and you know, and a little tidbit of nostalgia. I'm one of the guys that carried Randy Savage to the ring on his throne with at that WrestleMania 7 in Los Angeles.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, if you look back on the footage, I tried to get on the side where the camera wasn't on. So I'm not a camera mark. I didn't want people to look. Louis Spicoli is another one of the kids that did it. They're all my students.
Oh, wow.
I had all guys from my school do that. And
that's
Vince
awesome.
Had us come down and paid
that.
us yeah, paid us hundreds of dollars to come down here and carry Randy. Was it, I guess it was Sherry Martel was on the throne with him. Yeah, and believe me, that thing was heavy as hell. And we carried Randy and her to the ring.
Glad you didn't carry it when Mabel was king of the ring. There you go.
or Big Dusty. So that's a little nostalgia note. Me and Luis Piccoli were two of the guys carrying Randy on that. And I helped set up the cage at WrestleMania 2 at the Sports Arena with Hogan and Bundy, too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm on video on that, too, if you look back on it, me and Wildman Jack Armstrong. And just, you know, hey, the things we do for a payoff, you know. It's all part of the business. When you love the business. When I was in it full-time, I had a passion for it, and I loved it. I'm not in it anymore except as a kind of a writer and, you know, that sort of thing. I don't love it as much as I did. I'm being honest. I'm not in it to make a living at it anymore. That's why.
Right.
But when I did it, I loved every minute of it. I loved every mile I drove, every autograph I signed, every sweat drop that came from my head or blood drop that came from my head. I loved it. It's what I did. And I have a great respect for the business. I still do. And, you know, I pay the price every day for having done it because I'm pretty beat up and had back surgery 10 years ago. And, you know, so I paid my dues for the business. And, but I, you know, I love it. I get to meet great guys like you guys, you know, and that kind of stuff is really cool, too. That I'm still able
to
do
really,
that. And,
we really appreciate you, Bill.
All right.
An open invitation anytime. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
We are running short on time, unfortunately. Bill, thank you for joining us. One other little quick tidbit of information to kind of throw in. Bill, I don't mean to, you know, date you a little bit, but I do remember you telling us years ago they had a show on ABC television, Tag Team. Roddy Piper, Jesse Ventura played the police officers that went off. Billy Anderson played the part of the ring announcer on the episode of that show, if I'm correct. You were telling us that story.
Yes, that is true. They did, and they took my voice out because they didn't like the acoustics in the building. The show people didn't, and they put Gene Okerlund's voice in. And but, yes, they used my good-looking face because they didn't want Gene's bald head up in there.
Of course. You're way better looking than me, Gene. All right, Bill, thank you so much. We're out of time, boss. Thank you, guys.
Love it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night, Bill.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Well, that was a fantastic interview, ladies and gentlemen. BigBillAnderson.com. He's got two books, and his knowledge and history of this business is second to none. Get on there real quick. Twitter, HXC Fuller, Facebook.com/IHWE Pro Wrestling. Check it out. We're going to have a link for Big Bill's website on there. Michael, take it away.
All right, yes, the silent host tonight. I try to get in, but people step over me. You can find me on Twitter at EncycloWCCW. You can find my Facebook page at facebook.com/EncyclopediaWorldClass. And also, real quick, before we close out tonight, got a message from Michael Elliott. He was our guest on last week. There are 9 days left in the Kickstarter campaign for the Rock and Roll Never Dies documentary. 9 days, people. He still needs to raise some of that money. Go to Kickstarter. Look up Rock and Roll Never Dies, the documentary of the Rock and Roll Express. Donate some money. Let's get this movie going. Let's do this. All right, once again,
Next week, Rob Schirmer.
Artist Rob Schemberger will be joining us on February 19th. We will have, as we've been saying all this show, Kevin Von Erich. Next month, we have guests such as Jameson, Gorgeous Gary Young. We have Mick Karch coming up. We are working on getting the original Mr. Wonderful Rock Riddle to join us. We got some great episodes coming up. Every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on IHWE Radio.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.